Hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and once again, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kevin Fernandes and Andrew Batista. Great to see you guys, Kevin. Interesting weekend for you, obviously Sporting won, but there must have been some mixed emotions in the Segunda Liga as Marítimo beat the Sporting B team.
That was interesting.
How were your allegiances divided in that one?
So, look, I tune in. I haven't missed a Sporting B game this season so far. I like watching the team play. I like seeing what youngsters are coming through. But I want Marítimo back in the first division where they should be, rightfully. I mean, 7,000 fans in the second division, that's unheard of.
Fantastic.
It's Lady and Marítimo doing that. So it's really important they get back up to where they belong. The game was controversial as ever. If anyone caught that game, there was a red card decision, a penalty that went against Sporting B, which was very controversial. And at one point, the referee actually pushed over a Marítimo player, which I'm pretty sure he's not allowed to do. I'm pretty sure that'd be a yellow card if it was a player doing it, but he's the referee doing it. Whatever. That happened. It was a good game of football. You can see that both teams deserve to be in the top three in that table. But God, if it wasn't entertaining for off-pitch reasons. And yeah, it's always a complicated one. But yeah, as far as my allegiance is kind of that's that explained. I'm actually going on an adventure tomorrow. I'm going to Naples for the game against Napoli.
Oh wow, fantastic!
As it stands, I don't know if Sporting's plane is in the air because apparently they're having difficulties actually flying it. So I might get to the game before they do, but should be fine.
Well, if they're gonna catch the ferry, they better leave soon. That's all I'm gonna say as the backup option.
Yeah, they might need a backup plane at this point.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Look forward to hearing all about that when you get back. And Andrew, we promised we weren't going to rub it in, so we're going to glaze over it. You're back in the UK. All I say is at least your team gave you a kind of reason to be happy on Monday night.
Yeah, definitely made it more palatable coming back and watching that really great performance. But yeah, I mean, half happy to be back just to sort of have a routine again. But yeah, like always, sort of your holiday blues, it's inevitable.
Well, I'm sure many of our listeners can relate to wanting to be back in Portugal, myself included. But let's get straight into the football. And of course, as we always do, we will start at the top of the table, which means starting with Porto and that game from Monday night, as Porto made it 7 wins from 7. The performances get more impressive as the week goes on. By beating Arouca 4-0 away from home, made all the more impressive by the fact that 3 of those goals were scored while Porto were a man down due to a early second half red card from Martin Fernandes. Despite the man advantage disadvantage, Andrew, they played incredibly well and really continued to dominate a team in Arouca who aren't half bad themselves.
Yeah, agreed. Just an overall really dominant and confident performance on the back of sort of a difficult midweek game against Salzburg that ultimately, obviously, we won, but sort of wasn't the best game. So to sort of follow that up with this very dominant performance, you know, a lot of great performances across the board. I thought there was a lot of good coming from the players coming back from injury, except for Martin Fernandes, who, when he had the ball at his feet, looked pretty good. But this is something that we know, you know, he's sort of rash in his tackling, and you know, he mistimes them a lot. And this is something that we've seen before. And it was unfortunate, and luckily it didn't cost us. But even when the red card happened, it's easy to say now, but I wasn't too worried because I felt as if we had things under control, even though it was just, you know, we were still only 1-0 up. But yeah, some good performances. I thought Froholt played really well. I thought Francisco Moura played really good. You know, he's quite limited if you compare him to some of the other fullbacks we have, but he's very good at the things that he's good at, and he got involved a lot in this game. So yeah, very good performance from him. Another goal for Samu, and then he came off at halftime. He had a little sort of a little worry. Hopefully he'll be fine for Sunday. I think that was more kind of a precaution and just to be sure. And then centre backs again, Kvyat and Bednarek, although they didn't have that much to do, they look really assured all the time. You always feel confident when we do have an attack go the other way. So that, yeah, they were really good. And then we saw Dennis Gould, who's been good every time he's got minutes. He hasn't really had that many chances, but he was very sharp in that goal, in that second goal, to kind of calm things down, because it was just on the back of the red card. There were a few sort of nerves you could kind of tell, but as soon as that second goal goes in, things relax. So he's looked sharp. Then the Francisco Moura goal, which is this great bit of play, real great sweeping sort of flowing move, and then ultimately, a good finish from a fullback. But it's a good, still a very good finish. And then Zaidu, of course, scoring in the 85th minute. And I mean, Zaidu, I'm not his biggest fan, and I've criticized him a lot in the past, and I stand by pretty much everything I've said in the past. But if facts change, then your opinions change. And the fact is, he's been very good since Farioli arrived. There's obviously something that Farioli's giving him that is helping him. And I think also it's very important to distinguish the fact that he is a squad player that a lot of the time was used as a starting 11 player. And that makes a difference. And now he's being used correctly as a squad player, coming in sort of when the game's kind of won, you could say, or the opposition are more tired, and he can do what he does really well, which is, he's got a lot of energy. He runs pretty well with the ball. He knows how to sort of join in attacks, and his defending maybe is not that great, but he did pretty well. I mean, let me just put it that way. I'm spending a lot of time on Zaidu here, but yeah, and then we saw Rosario come in. Again, he seems really reliable, and I like the look of him. So yeah, going into the Clásico, really confident. They look good. This is just what you need going into a big game. And as for Roca, I mean, they sort of did what you expected. They were organized. They had a few attacks of their own, but they never really seemed like even they were confident enough to do anything for real. And I guess the early goal kind of puts you back a bit, when you start like that. But yeah, overall, I think Farioli will look at this and be really happy. He's been able to integrate some of the players that were injured, get them back in. Albert Costa got some minutes as well. And yeah, just good all around.
Yeah, and there are a couple of things I want to come back to on shortly, but as you bring up Peruka, I think it's a good time to discuss them, Kevin. I don't know how much you agree with this, but maybe people find this harsh, but I have to say I was in some ways obviously very impressed by Porto, but also quite disappointed with Peruka just in terms of how they responded to playing against 10 men. It felt like it took them a while to almost realize that the dynamic of the game had changed and that they were playing with a man advantage, and they didn't necessarily have that change in mindset, which perhaps they could have had in order to make more of an impact on the game. They did have a spell towards more towards the end when the damage was kind of already done and they were already 3 goals down, where they managed to control the ball a bit more. But it wasn't, it wasn't perhaps what people might expect when, a big team is playing a smaller team, they're 1-0 up, but they get a player sent off and you expect the dynamic to change. You expect it to become maybe more open, maybe more end to end, but they really struggled even with a man advantage, and by the time they did get a bit of a grip on the game, it was far too late.
Yeah, and in that sort of dynamic, you can always kind of have two sides to the coin, which is you definitely praise Porto, because I think that the way that Farioli has Porto playing, it's very much Porto. Like, you can tell it's a Porto side. If you ask any Portista to describe the sort of side that they're used to watching and what they like watching, is that high intensity sort of football. And it's a word that gets thrown around a lot in Portugal, but casa, it's that sort of mentality. I think that's always defined Porto to an extent. And even with Conceição, you can remember a handful of performances with 10 men where it looked like the dynamic of the matches didn't really change, and Porto was still able to grind out results. And I think it's very, very fitting that period where people are trying to say that Porto are back, and you can really see the DNA of the side, is when, if anything, Porto actually improved when they got Martin Fernandes sent off. because there was there was a period where they just managed to swarm Arouca with bodies going forward, and it looked like perhaps Arouca didn't react as if Porto had 10 men, but neither did Porto, because they still went forward with a lot of intent, and it looked like only at the latter stages of the games, as you said, Albert, that Arouca managed to come back into it a little bit. But perhaps that's just natural because of the natural flow of the game, and obviously Porto will, at the stage that it's 3 or 4 nil, naturally just put a pause on the game, trying to try and be a little bit more economical, we'll put it that way. So I definitely want to praise the likes of Cholt in that sense, because he plays and he runs for two players, like, quite simply. I've never seen an engine quite like it. It's the fact that it's not only what he runs, but high intensity sprints the whole time. And it almost looks like when we praise that he's not a technical player, and he definitely is. He's just unbelievable. I don't think we can stress that enough. And look, when we talk about Roca, you need to go and talk about the manager, because Vasco Seabra has always been that sort of manager that either his games against the big three, they either end 5-1 or 2-1 to Arouca, or the side that he manages. And once again, the early goal kind of really ruined his sort of strategy, because you need to be very confident to play that style of football, to play that high line, to play very short combinations. I didn't see Arouca have much success going long. The times where they managed to actually get out of Porto's press, which is a thankless task at this stage of their sort of rise and this wave of confidence. You need to be able to do what Nacional did, to do what Salzburg did with some sort of regularity, and just play over, manage to escape the pressure. Arouca didn't really manage to do that. And playing a high line with individuals that I'm not convinced are tailored to play that sort of way, it was asking for trouble. And there were a number of errors. I think it was Sola and Popovic, direct errors leading to big chances, leading to goals. Having a goalkeeper like Valido, I think he's a bit hot and cold. I don't think he's the most reliable shot stopper in the league. You're kind of asking for trouble, because I think Nacional, as much as they didn't get a win, and at this stage it's very difficult to even score against Porto, I don't think that performance of Nacional showed that Porto are unbeatable. I think if you pack the central areas, play a little bit more on transition, try and test the likes of Bednarek and how he can defend in a defense space, try and test where the positioning of certain midfielders like Froholt, who likes to roam, more if he's in that sort of position, Vega's sort of defensive awareness, that sort of dynamic. I think you can test Porto a little bit more like Salzburg did. And if you can try and get someone on Varela and try and stop him from spraying passes out, perhaps you might have a little bit more success. Everything that Arouca did, it's you can either label it as naivety or ambition. If it goes well, you're obviously going to praise Arouca and Vasco Seabra and say it's very ambitious. But the thing is, and in hindsight, maybe it's a little bit easier to say this, but it just seemed very, very naive and unrealistic, because at this stage of Porto's ascension under Farioli, I think you need to be a little bit more realistic and soak up some pressure, play your way into the game a little bit, and then try and put your mark on it. Because Porto seemed to swarm teams in early phases, and just overall with a load of energy. Arouca, I don't think they have the defence or the focal point in attack to be able to justify this style of football. As much as I'm a big fan of their midfield, I think Jouade is a very positive and sort of versatile attacker. I do like him on the flank. I think it's clear that Arouca's selling point is their midfield. David Simão, his experience, Foucault and Lee, the two Asian midfielders, they have tons of ball-playing ability. Perhaps it hasn't been shown as much recently, because Arouca have struggled a little bit more on occasion. But there is quality there. I'm just not convinced that there's enough to justify this sort of strategy. It's not like Gil Vicente doing what they did with Benfica. It's very different moments for both teams. So, yeah, I think we're left at least in Arouca's situation, asking a lot of the same questions. Do they have enough to really go from that sort of mid-table team to try and push the likes of Vitória when they're usually there, or Braga at the moment, Moreirense or Famalicão, to those European spaces? And does Vasco Seabra really have the know-how and the sort of sense to perhaps put his ambition on hold a little bit, and perhaps even if it's a period for a game, ease in and then try and put your mark on it instead of going full out from the first 15, 20 minutes, play a very high line, which Porto just managed to expose with absolute ease. And to their credit, I don't think they even needed too much to be asked the question of can they break their block down, because they managed to bypass that on lots of occasions. And I think that if a team wants to beat Porto at this stage, they need to be a little bit more realistic, and they have to be a little bit more safety first.
I mean, just on the Vasco Seabra point, I wonder if he'll ever stop sort of walking the line between naivety and ambition, because that's what he's always done, and he's learned over the years. I mean, we had a lengthy discussion about him a few pods ago about sort of how it was a few years ago and sort of the development in the game. But I wonder if he'll ever learn how to kind of do what you say and kind of put his ambition on hold and say, look, this is who we're playing today. We're playing Porto, we're playing Sporting, we're playing, whoever. We need to change. We can't just go high line and hope that the players that we have can make it work, because guess what? It's almost never going to work that way. Do you know what I mean? It's very rare that, if your players aren't good enough, they're not going to just one day, suddenly be better. That's just not how it works. But yeah, I mean, in this game, they didn't do anything really that resembled anything I've seen in the past from them. This season, not really.
Well, I wonder if it's difficult for a manager like Seabra because, the thing we talk about so much with these managers is that they're never given time, and I suppose that must be quite a difficult thing to juggle. Because on the one hand, a manager like Seabra, who's been around, he's been at multiple clubs, he's had kind of these medium to short spells at multiple clubs. On the one hand, you could argue that he should kind of sacrifice his ideals in order to just stay in a job. He should just try and do quite a I'm sure the right word is, but quite a boring job just to keep safe and to keep is he just turn into that manager who just keeps clubs alive. But on the other hand, maybe he could argue that, well, he's constantly putting himself in the shop window, and in some ways he has to try and sell who he is as a manager if he's going to have any chance of being given a chance, or making, making a name for himself. And I think, maybe if we are to see him become a little bit more pragmatic or have that more long-term success, it's kind of a two-way street. He has to kind of feel that he's going to get that support from his club as well. Is his club going to support him if they go through an extended period where maybe things don't go to plan? Or is he just going to be sacked, when the club lose 4 out of 5 games in a period or something like that? And then to that point, he might just think, well, what's the point in this? I may as well just try and do what I want and practice my managerial nous and all that kind of stuff. But I definitely think that I agree with both of you, as we've both said, that he has some great ideas, but also some big weaknesses. And perhaps it is even just a lack of experience. He hasn't had a club for such a long time that he's confident in navigating all these different scenarios that he has to navigate. If he could add that to his game, I think he'd, certainly be able to take a step up in terms of his career. Before we move on, Andrew, just to come back to. Actually, I wanted to talk about Dennis Gould because I think that's a player that I don't think we've discussed on the podcast yet. Very interesting player in my eyes. In some ways, something of a forgotten man at Porto. If you kind of think about him being brought in last season as a sort of young striker, hoping to make an impact at a big European club, it would have been a big step up for him from the Swedish league to play for a club like Porto, but hasn't had tons of chances. This was only his third goal in a Porto shirt in this game. And even if you look at the beginning of this season, when you have the likes of Samu, and then they bring in Luke de Jong, and then they even brought in recently on a free transfer a striker, Jan Karamo, And so suddenly for a team that plays one up front, albeit with injuries, he slips down the pecking order quite a lot. We saw Danny Nomaso leave this summer, although not an exact like for like in terms of player, but still an attacking player who clearly saw his path to the first team stunted. But he's had chances in a couple of games. He's come off the bench. He got a full half in this one and he scored. With the likes of Luke de Jong injured, maybe Samu being a bit injury prone, is this a player that you think Porto can rely on? And are we starting to see why he was brought in the first place?
Almost certainly. I think Farioli is definitely seeing something in him now that he likes. And yeah, Luke de Jong is injured, but Dennis Gould is showing his worth as a sort of backup player. Yeah, like I said, every time I've seen him this season, not that I've seen him a lot, but every time he's come on, he's always had a lot of energy. He makes good runs. He finds good spaces. He's pretty physical. So I think he will probably play more this season than anyone thought. I know young Karamo's come in, but Karamo's kind of a forgotten wonder kid, and we're not sure if he can really kickstart his career again. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with young Karamo. But back to Dennis Gould, I think he's going to contribute this season. He's going to have minutes. I mean, Samu is kind of, again, he went off and he might have a little something like a little injury or a niggle or something. And I think that's going to be recurring because of the way he plays, because of the explosiveness and the way he runs and his intensity and his physicality. He will probably every now and then need a couple games off or something like that. And Luke de Jong's like in his 30s, so he also can't play that much either. And Dennis Gould is clearly a talented young player. Otherwise, we wouldn't have got him if they didn't see anything in him. He's adapting to the league, adapting to this new team. I mean, he came in last season into a Porto team that were not good, under a manager that was kind of rudderless and, a little bit clueless. So he's taken some time. But yeah, very impressed so far.
And a very well taken goal. I was pleased to see it. Like, I was
Definitely.
pleased to see a good performance from him. So hopefully that impact continues and he continues to be trusted more. Let's move on and talk about Sporting then. One thing I've said in recent weeks is how it's funny how Sporting and Porto have almost been mirroring each other in terms of the types of games they had. I think that stopped this week somewhat. Porto with the 4-0 win. Sporting had to work a bit harder to get themselves a 1-0 win away at Estoril. Early goal from Luis Suarez gave them that bit of a cushion, but it was not always easy to create good goal scoring opportunities despite dominating the possession. On the back of a great performance against Moreirense last week, this was much more of a game, Kev, where they had to be quite patient and had to in some ways, grind out the result.
The way that I put it was there was very low intensity. It seemed like Sporting really had a second eye on the Champions League duel. And in many ways, it seemed to affect Sporting the sort of occasion. So I thought it got to them at a certain stage in the Kairat game in the Champions League, even. So I think it's a slight concern, just the way that Sporting are kind of managing that sort of free in 3 days. The situation that they're going to face following, they need to focus on the task at hand because, as this game showed, I don't think Studil really threatened that much of their own merit. If anything, and this isn't really a shot at Studil as much as it is at the lack of concentration or the individual errors of the likes of Inácio, Debast. If anything, Studil's best chances probably came from their errors than anything created by the likes of Gitan, who is definitely capable. I mean, he's probably one of the better players outside of that top group of teams. Just his sheer creativity alone, his dribbling abilities, close control. So the way that I put it was that it was unimpressive as a victory for Sporting, but it was sufficient. Still didn't have massive periods of pressure. They had a couple of periods of control, but it's relative because at no point then did Estoril create a huge number of chances in that second half where they probably had a little bit more success or could have gone back into the game. They had a period of possession, but two shots in the entirety of the second half. Sporting only had four. But then again, they had the result in hand. So you can go two ways about it. You can say that Estoril limited Sporting very well, which I think they did. I don't think Sporting created nearly as much as they did in the previous games. That is obviously merit to the way that Ian Cafu set up his side. Sporting had to be very stubborn, had to be very patient, which at times hasn't been the easiest thing to do. I think the likes of Morita coming in for that first half perhaps helps because he's a player who's a little bit more careful with his possession, a little bit more intricate than the likes of Kostadinovski, who like he likes the vertical ball forward. He likes the first solution that comes to him. So you can definitely praise Stadil for that, but at the same time, I think Sporting perhaps need to get the 2-0 before they get too much in the mode of saving for the next game, and that is a strategy that obviously runs its risks. As I said, Inácio, he's been having some good games on the ball. Off the ball, I'm never 100% confident in his ability to not have a moment where he gives a careless ball away. It seems like it's a recurring theme. It seems like perhaps that's what might keep him from jumping up a level, moving to one of the giants in Europe. Personally, I don't think that Inácio has justified that jump up. In terms of other performances, I'm concerned about Pedro Gonçalves, not the quality of the play because that's never been in question, but it seems like after the 60th minute, his presence in defensive work is very much, he's there, he's just not doing much. He's like, his presence is there. His ability to really give himself to that sort of work is wavering. And I think one player who's been coming in, a real injection of energy, real vertical player, takes on players with absolute ease, with confidence. Alisson Sanch, I think he came in for this game. He's had a good 2-3 game run. This was another one. I think he might need to come in earlier and take a little bit more of the physical strain away from Pedro Gonçalves as he does build up fitness after a long layoff from last season. We shouldn't forget that. It seemed like there were a couple of performances that were somewhat just a little bit lethargic, not as good or as intense or perhaps as eager as previous matches. Like Trincão, I think there was very much that intent to do what he does, really move his way into pressure and really evade it somehow. He loves to sort of evade those central zones where Stoodle had a lot of players concentrated. And what Trincão does is he does it anyway, somehow moves past players, creates in very minimal space, and creates magic. In this game, look, he's a player who he loves to take risks. The risks didn't pay off in this match. It happens. I like the look of Suarez once again. Link up play, faultless. He's really making his mark on the team. I think a lot of people who weren't too convinced about Sporting coming into the season, slowly they're being convinced, and he is a massive part of that. Kenda, once again, compared to Jenny when he came in, is justifying why Kenda is in the starting lineup and Jenny isn't. He's just got a wider variety of passing skills, crossing skills that I think Jenny is a little bit more one-dimensional. Maxi Araújo, pretty sure he won man of the match, at least for Sporting. I think that's absolutely deserved because the impact that he has in comparison to when Mangas was playing there, his one-on-one ability, his ability to really attack not only down the left but also come inside and create a bit of chaos in that way is really impressive. And yeah, it's one of those games where it was a lot of the same, perhaps a little bit more concentrated into the first period of the game, and from then he was kind of coasting, a little bit of a game on autopilot. But sometimes that's all that is needed. When it goes well, you can't really criticize it. And yeah, comes with his risk, but I think everyone would take it. Wasn't as impressive as Porto's win, but the 3 points at this stage is all that matters. Let's see if it was worth it tomorrow against Napoli.
Yeah, very, very Very good point. 3 points, of course, the only thing that matters at the end of the day. It was a bit of a drop off though compared to last week, which I think me and Andrew discussed on the show was quite an exciting performance. But Andrew, two of those players that we praise so much, Pedro Gonçalves and Trincão, were probably two of the players who really struggled to make an impact in this game. Probably summed up that lethargic nature that Kevin mentioned. How much of that was down to the player, or how much do you think was down to sort of being nullified by the opposition?
I mean, going into this game, I thought Israel, their defensive record this season has been really poor. We've spoken about it more than once. They'd conceded 10 goals before this game. And I thought, well, playing Sporting, playing probably the Sporting, this version of Sporting is probably the best I've seen of them under Rui Borges. They're really incisive and they sort of know what they're doing now. So I thought they might get buried in this game. It wasn't to be, I think. Kevin has a good point that they did look lethargic, and there is probably a little bit of spillover from the Champions League and thinking about the next Champions League game. And there's a lot of factors that made them seem not as good as we know they are. Pedro Gonçalves and Trincão, it's not the first time they've had a good game and then had a bad game right afterwards. This is something that happens in football, and it's
True.
something that we've seen this season. But what they need is for the other players to sort of pick up the slack, and in this case, it was Luis Suarez, who scored that great goal, and he was fantastic in this game, and he's so good. I can't praise him enough. I mean, every week I come on here and I praise how good he is, except last week, but he still did a lot of good stuff anyway in that game. And then the other thing was Morita starting. We haven't seen him start for a while, and I always think that when Morita starts, Heumann just looks better. He just looks more confident on the ball. He that pass to Maxi Araujo that then has the sort of the cutback cross back to Luis Suarez for the goal. That's something you don't see Heumann do too much when Kocsis is on the pitch. That's what I think anyway. I just think Heumann's better with Morita on the pitch, and there's chemistry, and they've been playing together for a long time, and it's just different. I'm a big fan of Heumann, so the more I see him play well, the better. Araujo, huge upgrade on Mungus. Sorry, Mungus, you're good, but Araujo is just better. He just is, and you saw that, and he makes a huge difference. I mean, Alisson Santos, impressive. Every time I've seen him, he's so quick. He's very technical and very exciting player. For the Sporting fans to have a player like that sort of coming through. And if he can sort of take some of that burden off Pedro Gonçalves, who, as a player, we know he's good, but I'm not sure if physically he can take the toll of a long season of, a bunch of games with Champions League, with DASA, with everything else. And especially the way they're playing now, it's really intense the way Sporting play. I mean, very good from a Sporting perspective, from a Estoril perspective. I mean, they're sort of one place above the relegation places. They have a tough run coming up. I think they have Casapia next, which so, but then it's like they've got Porto to play, they've got Moreirense, Famalicão, they've got some tough games coming up. I'm not sure where they're going to get these points. Ian Catherine needs to figure something out because he's not getting the tune out of this team that I think he should be getting, because they do have some good players.
Well, Andrew, just very quickly, because just to expand on that a little bit, because I'm sure there'll be people listening who've not watched, because on paper you might look at this as Estoril restricting Sporting to 1-0 at home, and maybe that's an improvement, but would you not say that's the case?
I don't think so. I think this was a case of Sporting not being as good as they usually are. I think Estoril, I mean, they kind of look the same. I think Sporting, if Pedro Gonçalves and Trincão were doing what they do and what we know they can do with Luis Suarez and et cetera, I think it would have been a different kind of game. I thought the forwards, for example, for Estoril were really poor in this game. I don't think they really did anything that great. Maybe João Carvalho had a couple of good passes, and then obviously there's that huge chance for Marques with the Debast mistake. And then Rui Silva comes up big for you there, big save, and keeps things going. I think it was more a case of Sporting kind of not being at their best.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And if that chance had gone in from the DeBus mistake, I think it would have been a very kind of flattering result from Escherov's perspective. And Andrew, I'm so pleased you brought up Morita, and I think that was a really fascinating point about him playing with Hjulmand and the dynamic that brings, because it was something I wanted to ask you, Kev, about Morita, because he's had an interesting season so far. He's been in and out of the team. He hasn't always started. He's played games where he's looked like maybe he struggled a little bit, and he's had times where he's come in and like he's made a real difference. He obviously played in the first half of this game and then was taken off at half time. So just interested to get your perspective of what's happening with Morita and that central midfield position, because it does seem to be one of the main areas at Sporting at the moment where, not just because of injuries, but there's a lot of changing, and it changes quite a lot week on week.
Yeah, so coming into this season, we weren't even sure if Morita was going to be sticking around. Obviously, his contract does expire next year, so that is still way up in the open. And between Morita and Kvaratskhelia, you have two very, very different profiles. And even behind that, you have the likes of Simões and Bragança, who he'll be back eventually. Not 100% sure when, but you do have big contrast between Morita and Kvaratskhelia in particular, which is Morita seems to be a little bit more controlled. Kvaratskhelia really has no problems taking that risk, whether it be the ball forward, charging forward himself, like he just marauds everywhere around the pitch. Perhaps because of that more controlled nature of Morita, Hjulmand feels a little bit more comfortable taking that risk. And in all honesty, I think when you have Inacio and Debast, who are more than capable of playing those balls forward, there is less of a need for Kvaratskhelia. There is more of a need for likes of Morita, who overloads in a little bit more of an intricate way. If he needs to even step into the box, he can do that to play like the cute little balls in between lines and in shorter space, which Stadil, it looked like their only sort of worry was in nullifying Sporting and removing space from them and comfort from them, apart from playing their own game, which I think, if anything, could be a criticism of Ian Cathro in these sorts of games. I think Morita is definitely 100% necessary. Also, understand at this stage, he hasn't had that run of games which he's had before for Sporting. Perhaps, like Pedro Gonçalves, his physical condition isn't at the same level. So perhaps the injection of pace of Kvaratskhelia, that sort of energy that he brings, I think it's justifiable. If you ask me who I want to see starting for Sporting in these sorts of games, I think I'd prefer Morita. If you ask me who I'd prefer to start against Napoli, perhaps Kvaratskhelia, to be honest. So I don't think there's too much of a dilemma of who should be starting when, because they're both players with a lot of quality. I think we've seen Porto and Sporting, if not last season, this season as well, that you're going to need 15, 16 starting 11 players. It's not just 11 because there are way too many games and they come at an interval that you can't trust a starting 11. You need to have full confidence in your backups. The likes of Porto have already had serious enough injuries to Martin, Moura coming back, Samu coming off now, and they've had to trust the backup of the backup, and so forth and so forth. Sporting last season, I don't even need to get into that. So I think it's interesting the dynamic and who will get more minutes when, but they'll definitely both be used. And if anything, I think it was quite interesting to see Holzgrove dealing with the Sporting midfield because I think he had a very solid game once again. He's usually one of Stadil's more consistent performers. I wasn't too impressed with Patrick de Paula, to be honest. I think he looked quite rash in comparison to the others on the pitch. I think Lominadze looks like a little bit more of a seasoned midfielder. The issue from signing players from Brazil is that it's a very different game, a lot more open. I'm not too sure, and I'll even draw a bit of comparison from De Paula to Rios. I'm not sure that he's tactically fit in, and that will take a bit of time. So, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what Morita's long-term future is at the club because as we get to the end of the season, perhaps we might see him faded out of the picture if that contract situation isn't resolved. And that'd be a huge shame because from the moment that Morita came in, we need to remember it was at a time where Matheus Nunes was sold in an instant. There was a huge load of panic, and signing for about 3 million euros from Santa Clara stepped up with absolute ease. And since then, Morita has been very, very reliable. So, yeah, definitely rely on him for the rest of the season. And from then, we'll see.
Yeah, and for a player who I think I believe I'm right in saying Portugal was the first European nation that he played in, and Sporting definitely the biggest club that he's played for in his career. The biggest successes of his career have been at Sporting, and he was a stalwart under Amorim in that midfield and all the success that they had. So definitely a decorated player in Sporting's recent history, and someone I've always enjoyed watching. So yeah, someone I wanted to touch on. We should keep it moving. We've got in third place, of course, the third of the traditional big three. It's been a whirlwind couple of weeks for Benfica. A game we didn't even have a chance to discuss on the podcast. A bit of a setback midweek as they conceded a late goal to drop points in their home game against Rio Ave. Mourinho's second game in charge, perhaps a bit of a crash back down to earth for him, but they were able to overcome some hurdles in their game against Gil Vicente, which saw them win 2-1. They went behind thanks to a wonderful free kick from Luis Esteves, 10 minutes into the game, one of the standout performers in the league this season. But two goals from Pavlidis before the first half ended saw them retake the lead, and it was a lead that they were able to hold on to for vital 3 points. You have to say, if they drop points again, it would have been a very uncomfortable situation for Mourinho, but they did get the win over the line. The main difference for Benfica under Jose Mourinho is the introduction of those new creative players like Luka Bakio and Sudakov to the team. They made quite a big difference. Andrew, I thought Luka Bakio made a decent impact in the game, but not sure what your assessment is.
Yeah, I mean, they got the 3 points. They got outplayed by Gil Vicente in a big way, I think. Gil Vicente played some great football, and it was just one of those things. You've got the better players, and sometimes that's just how it goes. But as for Luka Bakio, he had a really big game. It seemed like the ball just kept falling for him. He kept being in the right places at the right time. I mean, he makes a big difference. But you're comparing him to the guy that was playing that position before, who's a midfielder. Who's Alzhenitsyn, who, as good as he is, he's not, he doesn't really have that skill set. It'll be interesting to see when Bruma comes back and see how that sort of works, trying to figure out who starts in that position. Sudakov was good as well. I guess the main difference was Ivanovic didn't start this game as well. It was Pavlidis on his own, and Pavlidis got his 2 goals. He's by far their best striker. He's their source of goals. He's a good striker. But I thought Benfica were not. I mean, they got the win. That's about all you can say. They were outplayed pretty much in every part of the game. I'm going to say this again. Antonio Silva continues to start. I think Tomás Araújo is a better centre back. I know not everyone agrees with that, but come on, it's pretty obvious. And I think Antonio Silva had a poor game in this one. Dedic really struggled as well. They were up against some tough players. It's never easy against Luís Esteves, who I think is one of the best midfielders in the league this season. I think that's without a doubt. Pablo made a nuisance of himself as he has this season. Murillo had a big chance early on as well that he maybe should have put away, but Trubin is a very good goalkeeper. That's why you have good goalkeepers to sort of keep you in the game sometimes. I think Mourinho will say, a win is a win, and that's how he is. And we knew that we were going to get this kind of, not park the bus because it wasn't that, but it was very pragmatic. It was very non-imaginative. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of Benfica fans that enjoyed the football that was played by Benfica in that game. And I don't think I'm saying anything crazy. I think it's pretty
No.
obvious. They'll be happy for the 3 points, sure, but on the back of that, you have disappointment. You really want them to come back and play some really good football, and now they've got this Champions League game against Chelsea. So yeah, I feel bad for Gil Vicente because they probably deserved more. They've got a good team, play good football. I thought Konan was also very good. Boatu is a very good centre back. This is a good team. You know, not the greatest team on paper, but they are good and they play good football. Cesar Puschult has them really. They've got a great bit of chemistry and they always look short of themselves in possession. And then the only other thing was probably the Aljunied in midfield. He hasn't really played that position this season. Then you throw him into that sort of position in, you know, against Juventus, too. Their midfield's very good. So it was a very difficult game for Aljunied. Probably the worst I've seen him play in a while. It would have made maybe more sense for Barreiro to start that game. I think that probably would have been a little bit better, but, you know, obviously easy to say in hindsight. But I think a few things to ponder for Mourinho about the way his team are playing, what he does next, what ideas he's putting out there, or he's just going to keep doing this, you know, this kind of whatever you want to call it. So yeah.
All right. Listen, I expect Kevin, I expect this from Andrew. Andrew's a Portista, so I expect him to be slamming Benfica at every opportunity, not willing to give them an ounce of credit. Surely you're going to be more level-headed and say that Benfica deserved the win. Because listen, you know, to get a win 2-1 over Gil Vicente, a good team, it can't be sniffed
It can. It definitely can.
at.
I just have a few choice words for Mourinho because I think he's look, we know the character. We know his words are said to have an effect. He's very quick to point out the physical limitations of his side. Obviously, Club World Cup had a shorter break. Benfica have had games every few days because of their Champions League qualifiers. And Mourinho, overall, he's had a lack of time to really put his stamp on the side. So, yeah, okay, I'll give you that. Against Gil Vicente at home, I expect you to have more shots than your opposition. They did not have that. I expect you to have bigger chances against your opposition. Despite their two goals, Benfica didn't do that. Gil Vicente had better chances, bigger chances. And I expect Benfica to dominate ball possession at home. In the first half, they did not do that. Nor overall, they did that. So, look, I'll have a little bit of sympathy because he obviously is a limitation. But there is a very basic minimum that you should expect from the likes of Benfica, considering that on paper, they have the best conditions. They should have the best conditions to compete and to fight for the title. A couple of years ago, it's undoubted that they should be in the middle of dominating Portugal based on their financial status and all of that. The fact that they can't dominate Gil Vicente at home, I think you need to really put that in perspective because there are a lot of concerns, and I don't think that these sorts of words really give a lot of confidence because you've just gone from a pragmatic manager in Lage to another one in Mourinho. If he doesn't see that something's wrong, other than the lack the factors that he can't control, you might have a few issues because look, there's been a slight improvement in terms of creativity. Lulu Kabakio, we've already said, he's looked very good. I think that Ivanovic as a left winger, it helps slightly just because you need Pavlidis as the focal point. That's literally the only way that you can say that. And even Mourinho has gone ahead and said that Sheldrup on the ball, when he has the ball at his feet, brilliant. Other than that, limited. And this is the issue. How do you get the most out of a side where you have a player like Sheldrup on one side and Luka Bakio on the other? They're very different players. Luka Bakio, he can run into space. He can affect from the wing. Sheldrup, he needs to be inside in short spaces. It's a complete contrast. And there's still a lot of factors that haven't been helped. Again, Otamendi was good. Again, Sudakov, when he gets on the ball, he looks slightly dangerous. He's improved the side. But Dedic defensively still looks like an issue. Dahl can't do what Carreras did. So, still an issue. António Silva hasn't looked anywhere as competent as Otamendi defensively. Trubin, as much as he had a good performance again, and that's good, he's forced into a lot of saves he shouldn't have to make. Neither the volume neither the quality. So we're here asking whether Benfica want to be a transitional side and whether they're playing the best personnel for that, or whether they should be a control side. And the likes of Benfica should always have total control and domination of a game against Gil Vicente. So, look, I don't want to say that it's all Benfica's fault because Gil Vicente were brilliant in this game. The way that they overloaded the right hand side of Benfica in this case, Conan Moreira in the first half, Joelson, how he came in the second half was also very good. That is perfectly studied by Cesar Bayshort because we know that Dedic likes to join the attack and maraud down the right hand side. He leaves a lot of space in behind. You can't fault Cesar Bayshort for exposing that weakness, and it was a very clear weakness, especially. And like Andrew said, you have the likes of Stivs, who really makes things tick, make things happen. He can drop into space, he can join the attack. And the quality of ball that he provides, it's exactly the same. So I think the personification of this Benfica game, and despite the result, because the result is obviously the most important thing, but it's not sustainable when this sort of performance happens. And I think the personification of this is that you have a left back in Conan who he wasn't playing the most regularly before joining back at Gil Vicente, and he's obviously arrived a little bit late. At the end of this game, his physical condition deteriorated completely. He was playing injured. He was hopping on one leg. At one point, and the clip has gone viral, he gets on the ball and goes past Rios. It's like, it is absolutely shocking because Mourinho comes after the game and he's talking about the physical conditions of other players. Your midfielder just got dribbled by a guy who has one leg. It's honestly, Benfica should do better. The result is good. Did they create enough to justify it? Look, two goals probably isn't the most unrealistic thing, but Gil Vicente definitely deserved more. So, yeah, I think we're left saying that the positive points for Benfica are much of the same in terms of the players who started the season. Players who joined a bit later, they've had a good impact. But how do you get them all together and playing co a cohesive game in these sorts of conditions? I don't see it happening because neither Mourinho is going to be able to change too much or willing to change too much at this stage. And I don't think that the squad is really tailored to play one way that Benfica, a side like Benfica, should play. So, yeah, I think we're left saying merit to Gil Vicente for a brilliant performance. They were unlucky. Benfica, congrats on the result, but the opposite on their end, that was a very poor performance and they got away with one.
Well, I should have seen this coming. I could have known in advance that this season it was going to be, like getting blood out of a stone, trying to squeeze any kind of ounce of credit towards Benfica from these two. But no, all jokes
They
aside, I
don't.
think.
This is the thing, they don't help us because if anything, we're defending their club. We expect big things from Benfica. They're
True.
just not delivering.
But in all seriousness, very, very, very valid points made by both of you there. And I think, do you know what? It just comes back to something that we were saying. We said on the last podcast, and we said on the special show we did about Mourinho, which is that, we spend a lot of time talking about this managerial change, but you can change the manager. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're fixing any of the underlying problems which existed before Mourinho arrived and will exist as long as he's there. So it's going to be a much bigger job, and I think he's finding that out in these early stages than perhaps just walking into a team and stealing the show and making everything all right again. So yeah, definitely a situation to monitor in the coming weeks. All right, well, we have got plenty of other great action from around the league to discuss before we go. Although I think we'll have to start with a slightly negative one as we touch on Braga's game from the weekend. Their struggles increased dramatically as they lost 1-0 at home to Nacional. They've had some poor results recently, but this result is borderline unacceptable given the starting lineup that they put out, the quality they had at their disposal to lose this game. So bad. Andrew, I'll let you run with this one because it was, it's been tough for Braga. They've shown one or two signs of improvement, but this is a huge step back.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the first interview Vistens gives after he's sacked, so he can explain some of the things he's done. Just because, I mean, I don't really understand what his ideas are here. You know, he doesn't seem to try and find any consistency. He's not trying to build any kind of chemistry in this team. You know, we spoke last week about how in the Ming Derby, that was probably the most balanced we've seen them. It was probably the most balanced starting 11, and they looked okay. They didn't get the result, but they looked okay. And I thought, okay, if he can kind of build on that and look at that team and say, okay, this is kind of what I have to aim for. What does he do? He changes shape. He goes three centre backs, so he changes that, which is weird. He completely, you know, he one of his best players this season in Lille. He's completely neutralised in this game. He's having to do things he wasn't having to do before. You change the midfield pairing, Moutinho and Moscardo in this one, taking Gorbi out. And it looked really bad. They were up against a very good team, so I will give Nacional credit, and they deserve it. But there's just no chemistry in this team. They just don't seem to be able to create chances. They've got a better team than Nacional by quite a bit on paper, for sure. But the guy in the dugout, that's the difference in this game, really. There was no, it didn't feel like there was any real urgency. They didn't seem to know what to do. They didn't have any ideas. It didn't make any sense. And then at halftime, he sort of tries to change things a bit because he can see it's not working. I'm not sure why he thinks he needs to keep changing things at this scale. And I know we were talking about sort of managers when they're under pressure. Sometimes they change things and they try and figure things out, but he knows the players that he has will suit the shape that he had last week, which is that sort of 4-2-3-1. It looked a lot better. In this game, it looked terrible. The three at the back looked really bad. Hodnicek made some big saves again, like he's had to, you know, this season, particularly at the end. I think, I hate to say this, but I think the sooner Vincent's kind of goes, maybe the better. Just because I think he's past the point of no return now. I don't think he's suddenly going to get this right. And Braga are slipping down their table quickly, you know, at speed. Who goes in there? I mean, personally, I think Thiago Monteiro, I'm a big fan of his. We all are actually on this podcast. And, you know, on that point, Nacional were really good. They were organized. They did the things we've seen them do because there's consistency. And despite this being a sort of a team that haven't been together for that long, they have chemistry because he chooses pretty much the same team every week. They do the same things. They know what their strengths are. I thought Chucho Ramirez was fantastic. I think his goal was superb. A great finish, great build up as well for the goal. I thought they were going to struggle without Matheus Dias after the red card last week. I thought that's going to be kind of tough, but they figured it out. They still, I mean, Braga made it pretty easy, but they figured it out in the midfield. And then I'm going to talk about him every week. If he puts in performances like this, 37-year-old João Aurélio, holy moly, 90 minutes
Great
every
player.
single week. What on earth is going on? And he's playing. He's not just standing around. He's playing football. He's in there. But overall, the defensive unit in this game were really good for Nacional. And yeah, credit to them. I think Vicens is circling the drain. And Thiago Magrigo looks better than ever.
Absolutely, and I'll completely agree with you on Vicens purely because, like you said, we discussed last week where he just found something which looked like a solid foundation to build on after all this turmoil, and then to throw it away in the way that he did for me is just that's really the final straw. And the goal that Nacional scored, and you're right to say they were fantastic. The goal that they scored, I promise you, will be the easiest goal they will score all season. They will not score an easier goal than that. Three very simple passes and the ball's in the back of the net with absolutely no opposition. That for me was just the epitome of the game. It was dreadful. Before we get too carried away, then perhaps let's move on to another game. Kevin, Morens continuing their great form to bring it onto a more positive platform. They beat Casapia 2-1 at home. Casapia themselves having a decent season, blistering start to the game, a goal apiece in the first 15 minutes. Schettin on the scoreline once again from our ends. And then that well taken volley in the second half from Bernardo Martins saw Morens take all 3 points. They're having a fantastic season, but Casapia themselves have not been bad. So it was an interesting game, I think, from anyone who follows the league closely to watch this one.
100%. I mean, you have one of the revelation teams of the season. What it is, they are currently fourth as it stands. So that speaks for itself at this stage. Casapia, if anything, was one of their better performances of the season. They could almost feel hard done by just going off the numbers. I mean, they had a number of very decent chances to tie it up or even get an even more positive result at stages. But it seemed to be a very end-to-end game, periods of sustained pressure from both sides, if anything. There's a lot of quality on display in this sorts of games. I mean, Casapia, they've been very much known to be a plucky little side who every now and again they come up with their own names out of nowhere and build them up quite a bit, and they seem to go on to bigger and better things, the likes of Xavier Godwin, and I've even gone back a bit, Jota Silva, where it all started. If the change in this side, I feel, is that if anything, we've got a couple of names that we recognise who've come in and they've made a bit of an impact. Just going off Tiago Moraes, obviously he's been at Boavista, Chihuahua, Abdou Conte, he's been at Moreirense. He went off injured, so hopefully that's not too big of an issue. Mm-hmm. But he looked very positive, marauding that left-hand side. And I think that's something that, considering Casapia, their sort of more transitional style of play, I think having him marauding down the left is a big impact. And Perez, who was really holding down the fort, or at least trying to, at Boavista when he was there. Add that to the likes of Lievelland, who he's been probably one of Casapia's most consistent performers. And quite a different looking defence to the likes of when we'd have Goulart and José Font starting at the back. It looks like there's a little bit more life breathing to this Casapia, who there was a game I watched of them earlier this season against AVS that might have been one of the most lethargic performances between two teams that I have ever seen. So it's really nice to see these sorts of players not only back starting and playing well in the league, but to see Casapia playing their brand of football that we're very used to them playing, absorbing pressure but coming forward with some sort of menace, being a very decent counter-attacking side. While Moreirense, they've just been a pleasure to watch in many phases of the game, many times this season. I mean, when you have the likes of Alan and Kiko Bondozo in the attack, the ability that they have to pick out passes and to play that intricate football, usually you do identify that with players at Porto, at Sporting, at Benfica. Moreirense have really a good forward-thinking team. Perhaps they were a little bit fortunate with this sort of performance. It wasn't their best, and Casapia did show some menace, but hey, Moreirense are making Moreirense Konings their fourth this season. They haven't lost yet. I'm going to check the standings very, very, very quickly, and obviously Porto have only played 3 home games as a Sporting, but Moreirense are top of the league based on home form. 12 points from 4 games. You can't ask for too much more. It's a brilliant start for them. Good continuation. Bernardo Martins makes a difference in this game, and it's really important to have a player who I think he was one of the first off the bench in this game. He looks like a brilliant, like, 12th man, if anything. He comes on with some sort of regularity, really refreshes the attack. Similar sort of player to the likes of Vasco Sousa or Lanzin that they've got in. Again, another intricate player. But he gets the win, and the Moreirense train keeps on going somehow.
Well, through great play and with great players on the team. I mean, I think this game was such an interesting one to watch, just because, like I said, I know we have a lot of listeners who tune in because they want to hear about the more alternative teams and the interesting players and managers around the league. And I think you don't have to look much further than Moreirense and Casapia for two teams to follow this season if you want to look at two smaller clubs really maximizing their potential, and with interesting players and stuff, and players like Kiko Bondozo, who for me has been like a cult hero for a while. I've always loved watching him play since he was at Vizela. Players like that, Alan Zinho, all those type of players. So yeah, plenty to appreciate in this game, and you're right to
Can I
point
just
out.
make a small complaint, actually? I almost forgot about this.
Go on.
André Ferreira last week, he made like the performance of a lifetime against Sporting, making about 10 saves. And Kai Sikwe is somehow back in the starting 11. That deserved a loss on itself. Like, how? What does he
That's an
need to do?
incredible point. That is an incredible point. I didn't even realize that. Wow, we spoke about him for about 15 minutes last week, Andrew, and I didn't even realize he was dropped. Well, listen, it's tough, but welcome to the real world, mate. That's how it is. Anyway, let's move on. Andrew, I'm starting to feel bad because, we have relished in our kind of disdain for ABS this season. At what point do we start feeling sort of the fun stops? It's just getting sad. What's the meme? Stop. He's already dead. I mean, they're losing 3-0 to Estrella Amadora. Things are not good.
I'm not going to stop yet, but I think we're getting close. We are getting close because, again, another, lackluster performance. Estrela are not a bad team. They're actually a good
No,
team.
true.
And we saw them play some good football under Jair Faria, who, unfortunately then got sacked. But I thought they were very good in this game. Estrela deserved the win. I don't think RVS did anything really to warrant anything, really. Kikaj, two great goals from Kikaj. He's really their sort of their goal man. And one of those performances where it's good for Estrela. They weren't really in the relegation zone, but you want to take these points early because you don't know what's going to happen later on in the season. And RVS are just glued to the bottom of the table. I'm not sure how they're gonna work this out. I look at this team and on paper, they're bad. On the pitch, they're bad. I wonder if I mean January, they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to find a miracle in the transfer market, try and improve the starting 11. I don't see how they are going to turn this around. But credit to Estrela, they were really dominant. I mean, I think it was the second Kikaj goal, the Sidney Cabral first touch. I don't know if you guys saw that. Holy moly, it's a first touch in this stride, which is so difficult to do. And he had a great game. It was two assists in that game for him. But they're a team that play pretty good football. They seem more direct than they did under Zafaria. I don't think that's a bad thing. If you can score three goals, why not? But yeah, I mean, RVS, the hits keep coming, I guess.
And do you know what I do? The one thing I do feel bad is actually starting by talking about ABS, because you're right, Estrella do deserve the credit. And it's a team that, maybe, not that we have any biases, but I do like to see do well. And they have struggled in recent series. They've always been in and around that relegation battle. They've managed to keep their head above the water for the last couple of seasons. I visited them 2 seasons ago on the final day of the season, really enjoyed my time at that club. So I'm always pleased when they do well, and they are slightly underrated because they do try and play some football and they have got some talented players. So, if they can have a slightly better season than they have in recent years, I'll be the first to appreciate it. Kevin, talking of clubs kind of hitting rock bottom, well, Vitória lost 2-0 to Alverca at the weekend. That's almost as bad as being beat by AVS at this point. Although Alverca, to be fair, have shown probably a bit more fight than the likes of AVS, even if they have struggled in the league. But regardless of that, I think for a team like Vitória to be losing 2-0 to an Alverca side who, we've spoken about how many players they brought in and the kind of size of the club in comparison to Vitória, it's certainly a disappointing result.
Yeah, a lot more of the same for Vitória, to be honest. Lacking a little bit of inspiration. And even when they're not, they're lacking a lot of cutting edge. I mean, Nelson Oliveira in this game, I think he kind of personifies what is going on at Vitória. I'm going to read out a little bit of his stats. He had one shot in the game, it was off target. He had a 73% pass accuracy rate. He had nine duels. He lost all of them, but he had nine duels. plus three aerial duels, and he lost all of them. And he made three fouls, and he lost possession 13 times.
Sounds like me at
That.
five-a-side on Sunday, except I didn't have that passing accuracy.
Well, the thing, Nelson Oliveira, even against Braga in the Derby Domingo, he had a real nightmare, missed a penalty. Look, he's yeah. How they let Chucho go to Nacional whilst they keep Nelson Oliveira, it's really sums up their season because they've let a load of players go, not really replaced them with that sort of accuracy, and they are paying the price because in the final third, they've created a few chances, but they never looked like really they were going to go. Where would goal come from? If it's not Nelson Oliveira, whose finishing has never been his strong suit, to be perfectly honest, where's the goal coming from? And it's just very poetic that in the 97th minute, Alverca get their second. And based off their first half performance before they got a man sent off, they really did deserve the lead, and they do overall deserve the win, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, the sending off is ridiculous, like just completely unnecessary. But the signs that they showed in that first half were very, very good. Pressing wise, they were a nightmare for that Vitória back line. I mean, they looked completely exposed. The two centre backs in particular, they had a horrid time trying to stop that front three. Lincoln back in the league, back doing what he does most well in the final third, looks real threatening. Can really decide that final touch that needs to be given. Figueiredo, he's come in for Chiquinho, who in the first sort of games, Chiquinho looked like their only source of inspiration, just driving the ball forward on his own. Figueiredo wins the penalty that opens the scoring, and does look like a very decent player. Plays very close to Milivojevic, but it looks like they have a real chemistry, which is weird to say about a side who seemed like they signed about 45 players. But as much as that is a joke, their pressing looked very good in that first half. It looks like they are sort of gaining and growing together, gaining that chemistry, really having a little bit more of an intrinsic familiarity, which comes with time. And yeah, there are a lot of players in this side to be excited about because the likes of André Gomes, who comes from Benfica's academy, he's had a little bit of a difficult upbringing into this league, but he shone in this game, made several decent stops. Navas in the back line. I don't know how Palmeiras has let him come to Alverca because you can tell he is a player to be in that Palmeiras side, to be in with a shout in that side at least. He's clearly above this level, on the ball, off the ball, just brilliant anticipation. We've talked about Amorim already this season. I think it's one of the few names that we've mentioned, and he was just looks like a brilliant all-round midfielder. And you're not even counting the likes of Chissumba, didn't have his best game. He can definitely improve. Minj, who's come in this game, made a bit of an impact. Tomáš Minj, that is. Or Salstivs, he hasn't really staked a claim in this side yet. He could do. Nwosi, who's played several times this season. Cedric Nwosi, who is another young player, and there are plenty of them in this side, one of the youngest sides in the league. There's just a lot of potential and a lot to be very, very, very excited about. If they manage to stay this season, what could they go on and do next season? Look at the growth that they've showed just in this first half in this game compared to what they were showing in the first few games. I think perhaps few people wrote them off too early, considering their activity in the transfer market. And they do look very, very good. As for Vitória, more of the same. It's a matter of time until Luis Pinto unfortunately gets scapegoated. I'm not sure there's a lot more else that he can do considering what he had and what he now has and what he needs to adapt to. Perhaps bringing in another name will help boost in the short term, but long term, it looks like a lot of the same for Vitória, a lot of instability. And at this stage, that squad is poorest that it's been in a very, very long time. So, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch, a lot of worries there.
Yeah, very true. But definitely on Alverca, I think a team that we probably need to start taking more seriously, because most of the conversations at the beginning of the season were about, oh, look how funny it is, this team signing 30 new players and Vinicius Junior is their owner and they've got Camavinga wearing their shirt and stuff like that. And it was all kind of treated as a bit of a novelty. But I think you're so right to point out that there are quite a number of quality players. And, you know, I was going to say maybe next season they can make a real impact. But, you know, this league can be very close when you take out the big three. And if they can start clicking and getting the good performances on a consistent basis against better clubs, they could really make an impact on the league this season as well, potentially. So again, another fascinating team to keep an eye on. There was a team this weekend who won their first game in the season. Andrew Tondela winning 2-1 away at Santa Clara. They'll be absolutely delighted with that win. A newly promoted club trying to make their way in the league. It's not always easy. They've had some good performances, especially against big teams. They played well against Benfica not long ago, but it's taken a while to get that first win over the line. But it came in this game away in Azores against Santa Clara.
And sometimes, as a newly promoted team, you need a bit of luck. And it's not to say that they were overly lucky in this game, but oftentimes the luck just doesn't go your way when you're a newly promoted team. Santa Clara played well. We know Santa Clara have struggled this season. Europe have re really knocked it out of them, and you can see they're struggling with that. But I thought they were pretty good in this game. Santa Clara, they did a lot of the things that we expect them to do. Gabriel Silva didn't start, curiously. He then came on and really was at fault for that second goal. Not at fault, but the marking on that second goal on Yaya Sitole was really poor. You know, he's just kind of standing there. When you can score with your chest in that way, then you know the defender's not doing what he should be doing from a corner. There was a missed penalty in this game. Maringão missed the penalty. Not missed. It was saved by Gabriel Batista, who he's a penalty saver. This is a guy that, you know, we know he's very good when it comes to penalties. And then obviously Maringá scores the opener. Yaya Sitole gets the second, and then Santa Clara, who throughout this game was still sort of testing and able to build plays, maybe not as sharp as they looked last season, but we knew that already. But all credit to Tondela, they've been a very impressive team this season. Every time I've watched them, I've always come away very impressed by the guts that they show. You know, usually newly promoted teams can kind of be a bit, you know, a bit defensive and a bit sort of not very creative, but they're very brave, and Ivo Vieira has them playing some really good football. We'll see if they can sort of build on this and gain some momentum, because they still are only on 5 points, which I'm sure they'll be happy with. But yeah, we can see how competitive it is down there this season, with certain teams that, you know, are bigger than Tondela that aren't doing very well, like Reiwav, you know, et cetera. And then we'll see sort of what happens. But yeah, credit to them.
Yeah, and you know, the most important thing is just to get that first 3 points on the board,
For
and it's
sure, yeah.
a big duck off your back and a big kind of, yeah, a big psychological block that's now been broken down for them. So hopefully the start of some progress. And to round things off, I was surprised, Kevin, when you said you wanted to talk about a game that ended nil-nil, as Famalicão ended in a nil-nil draw at home against Rio Ave. But I'm guessing there's slightly more to this game than the scoreline might suggest.
You could say that, because yeah, it was a nil-nil, but Famalicão did not deserve the nil-nil in any way, shape, or form. If it wasn't for Mixta and the Reiwav goal, then it wouldn't even been nil-nil at the start of the first half. I mean, that was utter domination from Famalicão in that first game. Reiwav did have a couple of big chances when he finally did manage to go forward, but yeah, it looks like it's a case of Mixta needs to save, André Luiz needs to get the ball forward, or Clayton, and one or the other scores. Everything else that comes in the middle, yeah, we're not too sure about that. And my worry with Reiwav, because look, it's not a poor squad. I don't think Roussai is a bad player. I don't think Banzo is a bad player. I don't think Aguilera is a bad player. Neither is Richards. And look, Reiwav do have a bit of quality in their ranks. I'm not too sure they should be too worried about relegation as a whole. They could be in the fight, and as it stands, I think they could be. I think the quality that they have at the top end and in the net should be enough to keep them away from that. But I'm really, really trying to figure out what the idea of the manager is. I mean, I can't even pronounce his last name. I'm not going to try to. Sotiriş. I'd love to know whether he's trying to absorb pressure and bomb forward, but I'm not 100% sure that that's the case. That I don't know what the idea is of the club as a project, and I don't know where they're going, because there wasn't one single Portuguese player in this starting 11. Once again, it's been a bit of a theme. It looks like it's a little bit of a Greek takeover. I don't see a whole lot of quality in the players that have come over. I don't see the same benefits as like Santa Clara being taken over by the Brazilians and some other examples of in that sort of aspect. I'm just left slightly baffled as to what the idea is, other than pray that the big two up front manage to have some sort of inspiration. So yeah, as it stands with this current manager, I think I'd put them down there. I think I've seen more positive signs from the likes of Tondela, who have played some very decent football at times, than I've seen from the likes of Hiwav. And yes, this is after that they've just got a result from this game, another draw. I think that's their fifth this season, if I'm not wrong. 5 points, all draws. So they're clearly difficult enough to beat with a goalkeeper who's in tremendous form, perhaps one of the best performers this season. I don't see that as sustainable. I don't think there's a huge future with this manager. I think that their bid for safety is very dependent on the manager at this stage, because I don't think he's the man who's going to really steer them clear. He could battle, but I don't think they'll be too safe with him in charge. And that is another session of hate on this podcast, because apparently we are very critical today. So I will move to Famalicão, because I did have some very positive words to say about
Oh,
them.
thank God for
I did look. Well, it looks like we're a bit contradictory on this show, because the result does not dictate what we say about the teams at all. Like, we clearly watch the games, because this isn't based on the stats.
that.
But hell, Famalicão, they put in a hell of a performance in the first half. In the second half, I think they took a little bit longer to get going. I think they built up momentum. It's a shame that that 90th plus minute winner got cancelled out. Aboubakar comes in for Elisor, who I was moderately impressed with in this game. I think his link up was a lot better than I've seen recently from him. He comes in and it looked like he was going to be a winner. Wasn't to be. And I think Famalicão looked very, very well drilled. It's another big performance for Karavic in goal. A couple of decent saves. I think he looks like one of the better rounded goalkeepers, because we often really underline the saves that they make, but he comes out of his post very, very well, claiming crosses, looks very commanding. So I think he's definitely a name to look out for in the near future. He could probably make the jump up that the likes of Velho didn't really look too reassured to do, because there was a little bit more of that doubt whether he could come out of his post and be a little bit more progressive. Other than him, I've written a couple of names, because I had to do something to pass the time in a game that ended 0-0. Gustavsson, again, there's not a time that we're going to talk about Famalicão and not talk about Gustavsson. His progressive play, the way that joined the attack and played close to Elisor, everything seems to flow through him. Just a brilliant technical player and just so unique. I mean, he doesn't look like he's over 6 foot. He's 6 foot 2, 6 foot 3. He doesn't look it in the way that he plays with the ball at his feet. Very good player. Suiz this season has looked very, very consistent. One of the key creators in this game, alongside Gustavsson and for Famalicão in general. Justin De Haas, his work around the box, defending his box, is always impeccable. They just really look, traditional sort of style of defending in that sort of aspect. And the one man I want to mention that we perhaps haven't talked about too much so far, Van Nistelrooy. He's come in next to Diamorim, who we had some very positive words to say at some stages this season. And he looks every bit as good, if not better, more well-rounded, looks a little bit more secure on the ball a little bit. I'd say Diamorim, when he has time and space, he can pick out his pass. Under pressure, he looks a little bit less reassured. Van der Looy looked every bit comfortable in any part of the pitch. Defensively, didn't do a lot wrong. Got the ball forward very, very well, very quickly, very effectively. So I think that could be the name to look out for in this team in the next few games at the very least. And yeah, I think it's a game where Chihuahua never dominated at any stage. They had a couple of loose chances, but very sporadic sort of play. Famalicão dominated from start to finish. So very, very positive for them. For Chihuahua, I'm not too sure about them because they don't... There's something to say about a side who have five draws. They're clearly hard to beat on paper, but I don't think they're necessarily too effective in a way that they prevent the chances from being created. I think that it was very easy for Famalicão to get into the final third. And I think it's going to be a case where Mishta is called into action very often, and the times that he does not correspond with the volume that he's been asked to defend, it could be very, very difficult for Chihuahua. So something is going to have to change there. So for Famalicão, keep doing what they're doing because they're in with a very interesting group along with Gil Vicente and Moreirense. I think the way that Braga are going, the way that Vitória are going, even Santa Clara at this stage, perhaps we could have a new fourth or fifth finisher.
Yeah, very exciting times, definitely.
I think with the Rio Ave point, I mean, we spoke about Rio Ave last week as well, didn't we, at length about what their idea is. And I think that'll be a good conversation to have at some point about how, you know, you thought the sort of the them joining the multi-club sort of structure of, you know, Marinakis Incorporated was going to be this big change, but they've kind of become an afterthought, it seems, and there's no clear vision of what they want to do. And they're worse for it because, you know, Rio Ave are a real football club that have fans and everything. And every time I watch them now, it is literally Clayton and Andre Luiz, the only guys that...
Absolutely.
That's the only time they score goals is these two guys. And it's usually like something insane. You know, obviously the Benfica goal, Andre Luiz's goal against Benfica was insane. And that's kind of the only way they do anything this season. Mm-hmm. And it's a real shame.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's definitely justification for a real deep dive on Rio Ave and their direction and lack of it that they're heading in, because it's a fascinating picture, even if it's not in the best situation for the fans at the moment. But gents, I think we'll leave it there. That was a great look at this weekend's action. Some fantastic games all over the league. Not all hate as well. Some praise in there, squeezed in every now and again. But I should just say, of course, a big thank you to everyone for taking the time to listen to the show. Big thank you to my co-hosts, Kevin Fernandes and Andrew Batista, two of the finest commentators on the Portuguese game in the English language. You can find the links to their Twitter pages in the descriptions, and you'll find all their work on there if you want to check it out. And if you want to support the show even further, there's a link to our Patreon in the description of this podcast where you can chip in and get involved with our little community on there, which is very enjoyable. But yeah, I think that just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again next week.